Welcome to the Net Mums podcast, where real parenting conversations happen. I am JB Gill.
And I'm Louise Burke from Net Mums. Well, the school holidays are officially here, which is lovely, JB, until you realise you're now responsible for planning 6 weeks of entertainment and producing, I don't know what, 147 meals and snacks before September? Honestly, Jay, answer this for me. How are the kids hungry all the time?
Well, firstly, I love the fact that you counted out all the meals and snacks.
And multiply it by 10 for sure.
Honestly, I have no idea. It's like they finish school and then the hunger button gets pressed. Yeah. And it's continually depressed until you get to September. I don't understand how they get the appetite, to be very honest with you.
I know.
Today is going to be very exciting. This is definitely where you want to be. If you are that parent as well who's wondering what's for lunch and the kids are constantly badgering for food, then keep listening.
Yeah, I know. And also, I think as well with it, Bic, can I just add, I just want to add something that is important. The heat. The heat is so important. Yep. And feeding our kids during this heat. I don't know about yours, but mine just ended up on some ice cream diet, which probably not something our next guest is going to have good things to say about.
Well, we are joined by someone who has helped thousands of parents feel much more confident about feeding their children. In her own right, she's a leading baby and child nutritionist. She's a best-selling author. She's written 4 parenting books, I think, from How to Wean Your Baby all the way through to Toddler Advice, and of course, Feeding the Family as well. She's a passionate advocate for giving children a healthier start in life. And of course, she's a Net Mums regular. So welcome, Charlotte Sterling Reed.
Welcome, Charlotte.
I'm so excited to be here, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
This is nice because it almost feels like having a friend on the podcast.
I know.
I was thinking that.
It's really...
Yeah. Maybe you're going to have to shut me and Louise up.
Well, normally it's Jay. Normally Jay's there going, oh, we've met so many times and this is friend. And I get a chance
to
say.
I love that.
Yes. No, it's going to be great. And I think it's a topic that I know, obviously, Charlotte, you've got lots to talk about, but we all have something in common because we can all relate to it, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm going to kick this off, Charlotte. Why does feeding your family feel like a full-time job during the summer holidays? I say during the summer holidays, actually all year round.
Always.
But I know it intensifies in the summer holidays, and that's where we're at the moment. Why does it feel such an overwhelming job for parents now?
I think that feeding kids feels a huge job anyway, like we say, because... You know, when you think about it, it's 3 meals a day, every single day. Mm. It's, you know, quite often a couple of snacks in between there as well. There's multiple opportunities every single day when you need to feed your family. And when you are working or overtired or don't know what to do, it's really all consuming. Mm-hmm. And I think if you add on to that things like allergies or children who refuse food or who are a bit more, you know, cautious with their eating, it becomes something that us as parents, we think about all the time. Mm-hmm. Add on to that the fact that we see social media and media and we see all these things about what we shouldn't do. And we see the kind of perfect way to feed your child and all the things we're doing wrong. And again, it consumes our brains. So add on to that the summer holidays where the kids are out of routine. They're, like we've already said, they're constantly asking for food or snacks, where their eating habits are, let's be honest, not quite normal. You know, it might be
a little bit flex.
A few more ice creams in there. and like I say, really out of routine. Kids are thinking about food. Maybe they're a bit bored. Maybe there's less traffic of the day. So it becomes, honestly, all-consuming. And I think as parents, we take that on as us doing something wrong, us failing, us needing to figure it all out. And sometimes it's about stepping back and going, do you know what? This is really chaotic environment. It's chaotic for them. It's chaotic for us. We don't need to have it all figured out. Let's just see where we get to, because the pressure on us as parents is enormous, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm glad you admit that as well, because you're a mum of 2 as well, 2 small kids. But ultimately, we all want our kids to be healthy, right? And ultimately, we want them to enjoy food, because who doesn't enjoy food? It's delicious. But the mix of the sort of, you know, the reduced bandwidth, juggling jobs, juggling school runs, even the holiday camps out of routine in the summer holidays. It all and then add to that like the cost of everything going up as well. And you know, I've done it before where I've hovered over some like beef mince, you know, whether I put it in my basket or not, because actually it's like £5 for 500 grams. It's like nuts. And it didn't used to be. So there is a lot of pressure. Do you think we're eating more in the summer holidays?
I think, I mean, I've just been talking about this. I think the snacking is actually what drives parents mad. I think it really does.
Out of control.
There's a lot of asking for it. And obviously that has a knock-on effect to mealtimes. If kids are snacking more, they don't have an appetite for mealtimes. And then you have this vicious cycle where parents going, oh, I've got to produce a really nice healthy meal because they've been snacking all day. And then they give them this nice healthy meal and then the healthy meal's refused. And then they're thinking, oh God, I failed again. But one thing I want to say to what you were just saying, Louise, though, is that it's so important for parents to remember, yes, we do want our children to be eating well. We want them to love food. That doesn't come in one meal. That doesn't come in 6 weeks. That comes with months and years of helping children to build a relationship with food, which I know is easier said than done. But I think we need to take that pressure off of ourselves and think, this is a summer holiday. Yes, it's not going to be perfect. But whose diet is perfect? Nobody, mine, you know, and I'm a nutritionist. So nobody's is perfect. We must take that pressure off ourselves. I'm not saying forget about it and just offer them whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm saying take the pressure off. Healthy eating is not going to be built in this summer holiday. And I, you know, my kids, when we go out, when we eat out, when we're at friends' houses, when we have parties, when we go for picnics, whatever we do, I never worry about what my kids eat. And sometimes people look at me like, are you okay with them just eating that? They've eaten nothing else. And
do you feel like the beady eyes are on you sometimes? Like, oh my God, the expert nutritionist has just let her kid have ice cream.
There was one time when my daughter was at a birthday party and she was quite young at the time, but she just kind of started getting her taste of party food and party room. And I remember her being at a table and eating, honestly, far too much, but obviously I was going, not going to say anything. And someone said to me, well, I'm not going to let you feed my child. And I was thinking, okay, they don't get the context. When I'm out with my kids, I am not micromanaging what they eat. I'm not even thinking about what they eat. I'm thinking about their experience, their enjoyment, how they appreciate food. And what I'm doing is I'm modeling. And I'm also editing maybe what I might give them at home that evening based on what they've eaten that day, surreptitiously. So don't even know I'm doing that. But, you know, try and take that pressure off, because honestly, we put so much on ourselves.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing. And I think a lot of parents will be sort of drawing the parallels to school, because, of course, they've just spent the bulk of, 9 months or whatever it is, you know, pretty much at school within that sort of routine. Yes, there's been holidays sort of, you know, various different periods throughout that. But when you think, okay, they go to school, you give them breakfast before they go usually, and you know, they then have their day, they have their lunch, maybe they have the break time or whatever. They might have a couple of snacks, a bit of fruit at my kids' school anyway. But they don't eat in the same way that you know, that you sort of feel like they eat as soon as they come home and it's a holiday. Is that change in, I suppose, that maybe their appetite because they're less active or less in that routine, or is it simply boredom?
I mean, I think it varies from child to child. I think for some kids, maybe at school, they don't feel, maybe they're not getting enough, or maybe it's too much, or maybe they don't like the food. But actually, for me, that routine is really helpful. I would say one of the key things from babyhood right up until older children, one key thing is routine. If you can get them into routine, they start to understand their own body clock. They start to understand when they're hungry, when they're full, when they need a top up. Whereas once we get to summer holidays and that routine goes, they've got no idea whether they're hungry or full. So I think the lack of routine is really important. Although, you know, for most of us, that is going to happen during the holiday.
Because we might lie in and not have breakfast till like half
we're
9,
rushing
10 o'clock.
Out the door. We're going to a play park all day and there's no opportunity to sit down and eat. We're going to a friend's party and they've packed up. You know, so many different reasons. I think the more that you can try and establish some kind of routine around eating, it doesn't have to be certain times, just some kind of establishment of maybe like we have breakfast around here and lunch around here. That can really help with their appetite control. But I also do think, JB, as you say, I think boredom is a huge amount to play, or just you know, habits. What are their normal habits? Maybe they're in the kitchen a lot more and they're just finding the habit.
Hanging around.
So I think it's a variety. And I think, you know, there's a lot of children the other way as well who, in this heat, out of routine, grazing on more foods, their appetites actually can take a big dip. So I think it does work both ways.
Yeah. Well, I know my appetite dips a little bit when it's really hot.
You know,
I don't want to eat massive steamy spaghetti bolognese when it's 30 degrees. So let's talk about heat waves, because obviously we had a massive heat wave the other week. And no doubt we're heading for another one sometime soon and in the future, because I think that's our norm now.
I know. That's what we've been, I've been thinking as well.
So we touched on guilt a second ago. I know I felt guilty, hands up, giving my kids, although they loved the ice cream every day during that week of heat wave when the school closures. I was a bit like, what are you doing, Louise? What are you doing, Louise? You know, and I'm not going to, I'll admit, sometimes it was two ice creams in one day. Because we were kind of doing what we had to do to get through it. All of us, we were all melting. In your expert opinion, how bad is it having an ice cream a day? Make me feel better, Charlotte.
I think it's really true. The first thing I'd say is think about the context. Like, what's the context of the rest of what they're eating? Because honestly, that's what matters. And that's what we as parents tend to forget. We're like, oh God, they've had two ice creams. But what else have they had throughout the day? You know, have they had
watermelon?
Plenty of varieties of watermelon. You know, what else have they had? Because I think, again, we guilt ourselves without using that as part of the context. It's going to be a judgment call, but I would always say to parents, and I would say to you, Louise, don't overthink it. It was 1 week in your children's life.
Yes,
like,
true.
Think how much that is. It's 1 week. It's an anomaly. Well, it's not an anomaly going forward, but it is a bit of an anomaly.
But it's not an every week.
It's not an every week. And I think, you know, there's so many things you can do that can help to kind of mitigate that a little bit. So loads of really fab recipes to make things at home like that. You can start to get the kids involved in like making their own drinks as well. You know, maybe it's more smoothies, maybe just make things a bit more exciting. I make loads of different ice cream recipes. And honestly, quite often the kids have no idea whether it is a mum's homemade one or a non, because actually you can use loads of fruit, which is full of fiber, full of polyphenols, full of hydration, but also still quite sweet and tastes great. So loads of other things you can focus on, but I would say it's going to happen. Like I said already, don't have a look at what your child's eating on one day or 6 weeks, as this is going to impact their relationship with food. This is going to impact their nutrition, because it isn't. What we eat and our health is built on days and weeks and months and years. And also, I think one really key thing is modelling yourself what balance looks like. Do you know what? I don't fancy an ice cream today. I've had a few of them. I'm going to have X, Y, or Z. And also the balance outside of that ice cream, or what comes next, what comes for dinner, and certainly not having the kind of negative connotations or conversations around the food. So if you're feeling guilty, try not to show that to kids, because we don't want them getting thinking that food was bad. I shouldn't have eaten it. Now I feel rubbish.
But
it's going to happen. And, you know, definitely there's been occasions where my daughter's come home and I did actually speak about it on my stories the other day, and people were popping off in the conversation, which was my daughter had already had an ice cream and my mum then brought her home with an ice cream as I was there with the dinner ready, like, dinner's ready. You know, so it happens to all of us, and it's fine.
No, you're so right, because my daughter, when I say love, I mean loves custard. And whenever she goes to nannies, because obviously you know what nannies are like, nannies give everything and it's never a no and it's always more than you ever need. And similarly, we did actually not too dissimilar thing. We actually just let it slide and it must have been a celebration of some sort. And she had custard, then she had more custard, and nanny asked if she wanted even more custard. Of course, she said yes. And then she obviously not to be too grotesque, but she was then sick. And we actually said to her afterwards, not to say, oh, yeah, no, you can't have it because you're going to be sick. But actually, we said, well, you saw what happened when you had too much.
Too much.
Obviously, there's nothing wrong with having the custard, but just don't have so much. How much did children copy sort of our example, and also, obviously, in that instance, learn by their own experience?
Oh my God, absolutely. I love that so much, because first of all, you cannot underestimate you know, I love to say this statement. It's not do as I say, it's do as I do. It matters so much. I'm talking about a four-month-old, a six-month-old who's weaning, and I'm talking about a 14-year-old. Mm. They are genuinely emulating what we do without us even realizing it. If you think about a baby, how quickly do they start copying our faces?
Mirroring, yeah.
How many times do they swear when they've heard us say a swear? Like, they're literally imitating us from such a young age. Yeah. And I promise you, they're picking up cues of your language around food, your relationship with food, what you say, do, and act around food. Mm. So one thing is getting your own relationship with food sorted first and foremost can have a huge impact on them. Watching what you say, not talking shamefully about food or saying things like, oh, I mustn't eat that. I'm trying not to. I'm trying to be good. You know, these kind of things that are really natural to us who grew up in the generation of absolute diet culture. So you modeling matters. And I also love, JB, that you said that, because I've done that with my kids before. They have eaten too much, felt really sick, and I said, well, you know, that is why we try and eat a balance. Sometimes when you eat too much of some foods, you're likely to feel unwell. The same as if they ate three bananas, they probably feel a bit unwell. You know, anything in context. So I think as long as we're making sure that we're not shaming that food for saying you'll feel sick as you eat, it's too much of anything is probably not going to make you feel great. So let's remember how you felt, and maybe next time you can regulate. And honestly, I have seen my kids do this themselves. Like, my son's always been really good. My daughter, less so. She's much more like, someone offers her an ice cream, she's like,
she's taking it.
Only now at six that I've started to see her go,
do I want it?
And sometimes she'll really try and like, I can't. Whereas my son literally sometimes lick one and go, I don't want any more. Yeah. She will hold on to it and be like, oh, I really want it. But there's been occasions where she's gone, okay, that's fine. I remember she had it the other day. I can't remember what it was. And I could see she was so desperate to carry on eating it. And I said to her, Ada, if you don't want it, give it to me. You don't have to force yourself to eat it. Yeah. And she said, okay, can you keep it for me? And I said, it won't keep. It's not going to keep. So if you don't want it, give it to me.
35 degrees, babe. It's not going to keep.
Yeah, exactly. Give it to me and I'll throw it away. If you want it, eat it. But remember, and she literally, it was like the snap decision. She was like, no, I'm fine.
I don't want it.
Yeah. And I was so amazed because for Ada, this has taken a lot of time to get to that point. Whereas, I love those points, JB. Sorry for labouring on, but yeah, I love those points. Yeah.
I feel like I could go down a bit of a behaviour topic here, and I don't want to, because there's lots of other things to talk about, but I just want to quickly ask about, because you talked then about distraction, really, with behaviour, ultimately.
Yeah.
She got distracted and she was like, no, I don't want it. But then what else can happen? And I know we've talked about this on other occasions separately, but like, kids with screens or will sometimes be distracted by the screen and just almost habitually eat and not really know what they're eating. So distraction can work in some ways, but it can work in the reverse in situations like screens, being distracted on screens.
I think it's great to try and teach them to listen to their own appetite. So, do you want this? How do you feel right now? And that's what I was kind of saying with Ada. Like, if you want it, you need to think, do you want it? If you want it, you're going to have to eat it now because it's not going to last. Yeah. If you don't want it, think about how you feel. If you don't want it and you're okay to get rid of it, we'll throw it away. So I think that distraction is often not helpful, and certainly, and I know the screen conversation is really tricky because I know so many parents really rely on it, especially parents who have children who have neurodivergence.
Yep.
And I totally get that. But generally, as a rule of thumb, screens can be really unhelpful for helping children to learn to eat in the long run, because it isn't teaching them to listen to their own appetite, to know how they're feeling, to know how much they want. And there's been research done where we've put, you know, kind of bowls of food in front of people who are watching the TV, and you can see that people eat a big percentage more when they're distracted. Because of course we are. If we're sitting there watching EastEnders and you're going, this is fascinating, you're not thinking, what does this feel like in my mouth? You know, your whole body is not set up to understand that you're eating it somewhere else, and you're eating completely mindlessly. So I'm not a fan of the screens and the distraction tools, but I totally appreciate how parents are needing that right now. for certain situations. And I would never, ever shame any parent for doing that. And I think we've all got to work with the situation that we're in. But for many, many children, having screens is likely to lead to them listening to their own appetite less and potentially refusing foods a little bit more in the long run, especially if they haven't got that kind of distraction in front of them.
Okay, so that's a bit about behaviour. Can I ask you some like really useful takeaway advice? Now we're in summer. Like you said, people are doing days out, theme parks, or the local park for a picnic. I mean, the obvious thing, I think, for many families is sandwich, bag of crisps, chocolate biscuit, and maybe a piece of fruit. Can expert nutritionist Charlotte Sterling-Reed please give me some examples for families for healthy picnics, please?
Yes, I love that. So, you know, for me, picnics don't really need to be that different to our usual meal. But my biggest point would be your expectation needs to reduce, okay? Your expectation of how much they're going to eat and what they're going to eat and the balance they're going to eat needs to be right down there because, you know, same as you and I, we probably don't eat the same amount at a picnic as we would sit and eat some food at a mealtime. It just isn't the same environment. So first of all, I'd say reduce your expectations massively. I'd also say, as a second point, try and take some really well-accepted foods. Okay, and then number three, prep those foods in advance if you can so they are easier to eat. So if you've got a whole apple versus you've got some slices of an apple, I know which one is going to get more eaten. So prep foods so they're a bit more easy to eat as a grab and go. Prep foods that you know they'll like and try and take those. Some of the other things that I would say, like invest in really good ice packs and really good lunch boxes, because having those, you know, for me,
it's about the kit, not just the food.
It's important
about the kit.
Because then, if you have the right kit, you don't need to worry so much about what you can and can't take out.
Yeah.
Because you've got cool packs, cool boxes, you know, thermos flasks to keep things hot or cool. So I absolutely love that. You know, hydrating fruits, especially with weather like we've been having right now, people underestimate how much hydration we actually get from food. So if your kids are not drinking water right now, focus on some foods. And again, we're talking smoothies, we're talking maybe kind of homemade ice lolly type things, we're talking watermelon. You know, how many kids are going to turn down big chunks of watermelon sliced up nicely and popped in a container with an ice pack on top? So for me, it's trying to take some of those hydrating foods, veggie fingers, hummus dips. Again, easy grab and go things they can munch. If you are worried about balance, then things like taking muffins. I'm a massive fan of things like muffins, crackers, bagels. You know, my kids absolutely love bagels. They're more likely to get eaten because they're a bit novelty. It's not just a plain sandwich, something a little bit extra. And you can add in loads of extras in the kind of toppings and the spreads that you use as well. So I'd normally say those are really good options. Little mini frittatas are also really good, good ideas. Also, absolute golden one, and I know we've talked about this before, Louise, but pesto pasta.
Always a goodie, always a favourite.
My go-to, because it's familiar, it's easy to eat, it can be cold. I'm just trying to think of any others. But like I say, little pots of natural yoghurt. Also homemade flapjacks, or kind of lower sugar type flapjacks, little oaty type bars on the go. Anything like that are the ones that I would normally reach to. It's never perfect, I promise you. The picnics I pack are not perfect. They're not perfectly balanced meals. And I have very little expectation that lot is going to be eaten. Mm. So I do my best to keep things fresh where possible, reduce the waste, sit down, spend some time, have a nice routine around when we have that picnic. But my expectations of how much is going to be eaten, I promise you, are low.
I'd like to go on your picnic, to be honest.
It's a good job I had my lunch before coming on this podcast, because I'd be really hungry.
Are there any foods that work naturally better when it's hot? Because I think that's definitely a concern for parents at the moment.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like I said, that's why I always think about taking, I'm a big ice pack taker with me. But definitely the kind of fresh fruits that you can keep cool, the veggie sticks that you can keep cool. I'm just trying to think what else. Like I say, pesto pasta, I find that a really great option because it doesn't really matter or if it stays hot or it's cold as well. So those pasta salads can be really useful. Again, sandwiches are really easy. If you have like a Marmite sandwich, I would personally, I'd avoid taking cheese sandwiches or hummus sandwiches or any sandwich with a tomato in it, because in the heat, they just
sweaty picnic is not good.
Also, that's why we love bagels in our house. So we do take a lot of bagels with maybe Marmite or peanut butter or something like that, which just lasts a bit longer. So, and also, like I say, muffins. I love savory muffins and I love fruit muffins. And I often...
Are you making your own muffins?
Yes, usually I do. And I know that sounds like impractical for a lot of fun, but honestly, some of those muffins take 10 minutes to make.
You can do them in the air fryer.
Really, really quick.
Air fryer. You can
Doing them in the air fryer.
Them, which is what I do. I'm constantly digging through my freezer. I'm like, oh God, I forgot I had these. There's a whole picnic of, you know, 12 muffins. So I batch cook them. I make them in scratch. I always add extras in. You've got milled seeds in there. You've got a load of blueberries to make it nice and sweet. You know, maybe it's got peanut butter, whatever, and they don't even, they're not even thinking that this is a, this has got lots of healthy, nutritious stuff in it, but you know that they're getting a bit more extra balance. So for me, muffins on the go are the winner.
The way to go. So I've listened to a lot of your webinars that you've been doing recently, which are great. And obviously your podcast, which is great. And you've got your books and you're all over social. Yeah. You are all out there. And we were lucky enough to work together earlier this year on
Net Mums Family Food Panel. Our snacks project.
Something that's come up that I find in a lot of the work you do is about, and we've touched on it already, about behaviour and role modelling, but the way to really get your kids eating well and eating healthier starts from day one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you tell the listeners why this is so important from, in your expert opinion?
Definitely. So one of the topics I like, I'm kind of an expert in, is the early years. So this is generally the first, we talk about the first 1,000 days of weaning, which is the period from conception right up until a child's second birthday. And there's a huge amount of research on this area, which basically says that children during this time are kind of building those foundations of what health is. So we know that the nutrition children get when they are young impacts their risk of disease, their risk of illness, their education attainment, their, you know, their kind of health as they get older, into older children and into adulthood. So we know that those really kind of key days in the early years between conception to a second child's second birthday, they're kind of, sometimes they're called the formative years. They're really forming a child and they're forming their relationship with food. We know that patterns of eating are developed, expectations around food are developed, and preferences are developed during this time. So although I've talked a lot about, don't worry about it, it's all okay, that is true, because the relationship with food matters so much more than this one meal and getting this meal in, or this one week where they've had too much ice cream. Their relationship with food matters much more, because their relationship with food will impact what they, how they feel about food, and therefore their diet throughout their lives. But we do know that the early years matter. We know that this period of time really helps to make sure we are offering a balance. And as parents, all we can do is offer. We can't force children to eat anything. We can offer a balance, we can model a balance, and we can make mealtimes really enjoyable so they're more likely to be willing to come back and more willing to accept that balance. So that's what we kind of do. But we do know that those early years are really instructive for this. And that's why I kind of talk so much about weaning and fussy eating and food refusal, because it's classic during these times. And I know a lot of parents need support. We're trying to not necessarily get it right, because there isn't a getting it right, but to help them feel confident with how to approach this in a way that is realistic, but that also helps a child to get everything they need.
I mean, just take for granted, Charlotte, that someone, you know, parent listening to this hasn't stumbled across your feed yet, you know, and there's just so much information, as I'm sure you already know, out there on socials, in the news, whatever it might be, parents hearing things like, you know, my child has to eat vegetables before they're two, or, you know, they've got to try 100 different foods, or, you know, obviously, I you know, firsthand, I know, you know, your toddler might only eat beige food or whatever. What is the message that parents who perhaps are experiencing some of the things or hearing some of those things really need to know?
I think that, again, that kind of same message about this is not about one meal. Mm-hmm. This is about a relationship that's built over time, and that children, especially in those early years, they are learning every single day. We don't expect children to stand up and walk at day one. We don't expect them to be able to speak properly as soon as they say their first words. And it's exactly the same with eating, but we don't give it the same amount of credit. Yeah. We expect them to, boom, start solid foods. Oh, why is my child not eating all this food I'm giving them? Why aren't they loving this balanced diet that I'm eating? Mm. We have to realise that just as children are still going to wobble at 2 and 3, and just as they aren't going to be completely eloquent and have their full range of words at 2 and 3, eating is the same. Mm. They are learning this journey called eating, and there will be ups and downs the entire time along that road. And if you can expect them as a parent, it actually can take some of that pressure off. Because when you get that week where your child is eating almost nothing, you can go, oh, that's part of it. Part of the journey. And sometimes just saying that to yourself takes the pressure off, and it has all the difference to how your child feels. So it's, I don't know if that helps.
It definitely helps. And but for me, I think, you know, I'll just give an example, person example. You know, what do you do then when you've got a child who, you know, will try a certain thing? And I'll just use an example with Kiara, my daughter. She had she used to love strawberries, and then she went for a phase genuinely where she's like, I don't like strawberries.
I was gonna say this example. You've stolen my example.
Sorry, Louise.
No, this is good, because
exactly,
both of us have
frequent.
Have this idea about this. Exactly. I was going to say exactly the same.
It's real. It's a lived, like, experience, and I'm sure kids, other people will be doing exactly the same, won't they?
Mm. My kid had so many blueberries and then avocados. Won't touch a blueberry and avocado. And now they're 11 and 13. One's come back to the avocado at 13.
I was going to say, she's back to the strawberries
now.
She's back to the
avocado smash.
We could do a whole podcast on this right here. So first of all, I want to say, children get to a stage where they start to go, hold on a minute, I want to have a say here. And they often don't have a say in whether they cross a road, what they buy, what they wear, what time they go to bed. So they start to put that independence on that mealtime. They can control what they put in their mouth. Mm. And that's where they start to go, I can get some independence here. And they do it. So that's why they start to refuse the foods they didn't eat. Also, a period of what we call neophobia, which is where foods, sometimes familiar foods, sometimes non-familiar foods and new foods start to get rejected. It's thought to be a time where children become a little bit more independent. They become more wary of what they put in their mouth. It's actually all really normal, this phase. So the first thing you should do, JB, is go, this is normal. That's okay. You don't like strawberries. Mm. Never mind. You don't take them off the menu, because this is where most parents, in my experience, this is where most parents kind of fail slightly at the hurdle, because they go, right, they don't like broccoli anymore, off the table. They don't like strawberries anymore, we won't offer it again. And actually what children need during that time is to learn that that food is okay, that I can eat it, that others around me eat it, and it needs to stay familiar, because that is the only way they're going to re-accept it. If we don't offer it again, and then in a year and a half we go, oh, why don't you try a strawberry, they're probably like to go, no way, haven't even seen that for a while, don't want it. So don't take it off the menu. And the other key thing is, like we've been saying the whole time, model eating it yourself with zero pressure, because sometimes as parents we're like, oh look, I'm eating it, I love it, why don't you eat it? And that's gonna be
the strawberry, just so juicy and delicious.
Oh, I love this strawberry, you know, like a hair advert going to town. But instead it's modeling it nonchalantly, and it is taking that pressure. If they think there's pressure for them to eat that strawberry, I promise you, they're less likely to eat it. Yeah. Whereas if you take that pressure away, if you eat it yourself and you model, this is a safe food, this is enjoyable, I like strawberries, I'm going to have them regularly, you let them see it, they're so much more likely, as you've said, to come back to eating it.
Yeah.
We often draw loads of attention. Oh, why don't you like it? You like that yesterday. Go on, try it again. And then you try it again and you go, oh, please, just try the strawberry. Oh, look how much I like it. All of this will have the opposite effect, I promise you. So I don't know if that helps, but that is, you know, the role modelling, the carrying on with the exposure, the expecting it to happen, and the no pressure nonchalantness around those foods.
What sort of age are you talking about when they get more independent?
So normally the kind of neophobia tends to peak around about 18 months to 3 years of age. But honestly, okay. I've seen it before and I've seen it later.
Yeah.
It does really vary. But generally that kind of independence is around that
stops.
Where you do start then. They start to go. I mean, my daughter from 6 months, she would not even taste. She wouldn't even try egg. She wouldn't have it. But my son ate egg all the time. He was an absolute avid egg eater. So every time he had it, she'd either have it in front of her or have a little bit on her plate. Mm. And then all of a sudden she got to, I think it was about a year and a half, and she just suddenly and then she started eating egg.
Yeah.
I did not take it off the menu because it was part of our family food. So yeah, it's just the trialing.
And in terms of those sort of slightly fussy eaters, or what do we call them? Cautious eaters. The temptation sometimes, and I imagine every parent has done this, you make a plate of food, the child doesn't like it, the temptation to make something else in front of them, or something else until they eat something. Mm. I know you're going to tell me that is the wrong thing to do. But in my limited experience. But what about, so for example, like the story about the strawberry or the avocado. Yeah. So say my kid had the was eating the avocado, didn't want the avocado. Something I then did was change how the avocado showed up. So rather than just slices of avocado on the plate, it then became mashed avocado, or we used to do what we called honey boat, avocado boats, where it was half an avocado with a drizzle of honey in the middle. And they would actually have that for a pudding all of a sudden. But is that wrong? Because you like we're still presenting that food, but we're sort of not putting it in disguise, but like
no, definitely not. I think as long as we're not hiding food and we're sneaking it into things and not exposing them to it. If you hide it in foods, if you bake it into muffins and you never let them be exposed to what it looks like,
then
what
that's not great. Like,
then that's not going to help them to accept it again.
No.
But offering it in multiple ways is a brilliant way to help them see food in different contexts, to help them understand that all foods are different. You know, I always like to talk about my kids and bread. You know, we've got so many of my son's friends who come around our house and then we'll give them toast and they're like, what the hell is
this? What is this? It's brown.
This is not toast. Whereas my kids, you could give them any bread. And I'm not boasting, but we just, you know, experience with seeing foods in different
ways
really matters, because it means that they're more like, if a child will only eat an avocado if it looks like this, it's much tougher than if they'll go, I'll eat an avocado that looks like all these different things. And you're exposing them in such a great way. So definitely do that. I would agree with not offering alternatives as the general rule of thumb. However, there have been occasions where I've offered alternatives. Largely, one time I accidentally put cayenne pepper instead of paprika. I was not...
That would do it.
I was not going to force them to eat that, I promise you. And there's been occasions where I have made a brand new meal and they've gone, do you know what? We don't like it. And I've not gone, I don't care. You're going to eat this. I've gone, fair enough. I understand you don't like it. Let's do something different. But as a general rule of thumb, when offering day-to-day family meals and they refuse it, I'm not going, okay, my love, I'll make you some toast. Because as soon as you do that, they're going to go, aha, if I say no, I can get a firm favourite. And let's be honest, a toast, cereal, crisps, you know, those kind of things are firm favourites. So if you give them that option, they're more likely to go, hold on, spag bol, no, piece of toast with some butter, yes. So alternatives don't really help in the long run. But I hope, did I answer your question? I hope I did. But I love the idea of the variety.
Also, you've in as well as your one-to-one expert advice with coaching parents and families, you're also quite an advocate, a strong voice in campaigning around healthier starts for kids. Yeah. And I know you played an active role in the documentary with BBC Panorama about the baby pouches, which when we reported it on our NetMum's platforms and socials, obviously every parent of a young child had something to say. And I know, put my hands up, I have fed my children when they were younger with pouches.
Me too. Well,
obviously, the conversation's out there already. It was out there with BBC Panorama. But for those that haven't quite followed that conversation or has maybe forgotten about that conversation, what's the bottom line? What is your sort of advice?
Great question, because there is a bottom line. The bottom line is those foods are okay. nobody should be shamed for giving their children pouches because they're convenient, they're there, they can help parenting, and they can help to give us a kind of another option. However, we should not be relying on these as everyday or regular meals for our little one because they are not developmentally or nutritionally appropriate.
Okay.
So they're fine. Have them, you know, offer them to your little ones, but don't rely on them as really regular daily options because they developmentally and nutritionally, they're not appropriate. Sorry for repeating that. Just trying to...
Yeah, I was going to say I should have recapped actually what the BBC Panorama show actually found. And that was that pouches were being marketed to young toddlers who don't necessarily need that convenience food. And it is a processed food. You wouldn't ordinarily eat that amount of fruit in one go that you get in a pouch.
I think that the problems are, there's multiple problems. Number one was the age that they were recommending, which was often, you know, for, yes, older toddlers, but also for children under 6 months.
Yeah.
Number two, the composition. So quite often they were very heavy on fruit. And actually that is a lot of fruit and a lot of, of kind of sugar within those that's broken down, readily available. They also, the old kind of older ages, they often weren't a good source of what we would say balance. So there wasn't much iron in there, largely due to the manufacturing process of them. They also often didn't have much texture, and babies learn to eat. They need to expose the different textures. And these are inherently restricted in textures because it all has to come out of the spout.
Yeah.
And for most of them, babies are using them to suck through the spout. Yeah. So they're not actually seeing, smelling, tasting food, and it impacts the teeth.
The teeth.
So
which is a huge
reasons,
problem. Dental huge issues problem. In children is huge, isn't
But again,
it?
Never shame. You know, check backpacks. Choose ones that are more kind of veggie, savoury focused. Go for ones with higher textures where you can. Chop them open and pop them onto a dish and feed it via a spoon. Or even better, spread it on some finger foods. Use it as a dip. Use it as part of a meal rather than having it as the complete meal. So many ways. And if you need something on the go in emergency, never feel guilty about doing that because that is exactly how it should be used. So I hope that helps to kind of convey what we want to get.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And listen, you obviously mentioned feeling guilty there. And it's very good, I think, to hear from your mouth, you know, that actually that feeling of guilt is not something that we should be feeling, and we shouldn't be putting that pressure on ourselves. But there will be people listening who, you know, who perhaps don't have toddlers or babies anymore, you know, perhaps like us, they've got, you know, 2, 5, 7, 11, 13-year-olds. They're thinking perhaps, you know, I wish I'd done things differently, you know, perhaps I shouldn't have given the fish fingers or not fed my kids X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
How important is it for us to I suppose allay those feelings of guilt around sort of UPS like beans and fish fingers and stuff like that? And can you actually change that narrative, that course as children get older?
Yeah. So I would definitely say that it's not going to be as easy because, as we said, like eating behaviors, preferences, you know, expectations around food are established young. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, yeah, but you absolutely can make changes. And quite often that is still coming back to us as parents, our relationship with the food, our experiences, how we show up around food and around those meal times. Quite often that, you know, Louise, we've had conversations before about those meal times and how much they really matter. And we're still talking about 14, 15, 16 year olds, like what's happening at home, what's mum doing, will have a knock-on effect to how our little one, to how our older children also come back to things. So I remember going off to university and literally eating pot noodles for the first time in my life. I was like, well, mum's not around, I'm going to have these. And then, you know, now I'm, you know, I went back home and moved in with my husband. I did not eat pot noodles because I knew kind of the experience what I'd had as a child. So what you're doing really matters. And I think please don't ever think that there is no option. Don't feel guilty about those processed foods because, you know, JV, you mentioned baked beans, fish fingers. They're actually really nutrient dense options. Bread, you know, sometimes pasta sauce. These things get really bad rap. But actually, these aren't the foods we should be limiting in our diets. It's much more the foods that are the sweets, the crisps, the biscuits that most of us know aren't really adding much beneficial. So We want to be kind of, you know, focusing our diet on, yes, of course, home cooked food. But some of those foods you mentioned can really add nutritional benefits.
Yeah.
And they can take the time and the pressure off parents. So don't shame yourself for having those. Focus on the kind of home cooked food and modeling to your kids what to eat. And never, ever think it's too late.
Because
we make changes the whole time. I mean, we've probably had changes in our lives as we've gone along at the type of food we eat. And it will be the same for our kids. So coming back to what we do really helps.
And added to that as well, it's not just the mealtime in itself. It's the preparing or the shopping. Or the recipe finding as well. It's like get your kids involved, especially if they're a bit older. Get them involved in that as well. Get them involved in stirring, watching the meat turn a different colour as you're cooking it. All that sort of thing. It's like get them involved.
I feel like a lot of that has lost, wasn't it? Because at our, you know, I guess our ages roughly, we had no cooking lessons in school.
Yeah.
Learn how to cook. You didn't learn how to prep meals, and I think we've got a whole generation who really didn't ever learn to cook. So the more that we can teach our kids, even from a really young age, to stir, to spread, to get involved in the cooking, and actually it's chaos, the kids love it.
Yeah. My two love it. I do. I've always done it. You get them to taste that bit of pasta. Oh, is it done enough? Oh, not sure.
No, it's so important. So before, just to finish off then, before we move to a bit of a quick fire round, I'll hand you to JB for that. What's the one thing that parents worry about, do you think, around feeding their family that really they shouldn't? Really, you don't want them worrying about it. If you could stop them worrying.
I think the real thing that I see parents worrying about, it's the up and down appetites. And I constantly say this, and I've said it already here, but we really ought to expect that. Take that as the norm. Let's not medicalize kids having these kind of up and down appetites, because we have up and down appetites. You said, Louise, when it's hot, you don't want to eat so much, you know. Maybe you've been really active. Maybe you ate loads yesterday. Maybe you're just not feeling quite right today. Kids have all these too. Mm. And we expect them to eat food and then it should be like this the whole way.
Like robots.
And it would like that. Their appetites will go up and down constantly based on so many different fluctuations of things around them, including the weather, including how they feel, including what they ate yesterday, including, you know, their distractions like we've talked about. So expect those appetites. Don't worry if a meal here and a meal there and a meal there starts to get refused, because actually it's part and parcel of feeding kids.
Yeah, and obviously they're all growing as well. My two are definitely.
Suddenly their appetite will shoot up and you'll be like, oh my God, is this wrong? Am I giving them too much? So
great. I'm going to hand you over to JB now for a quick fire.
All right. It's quick fire time, Charlotte. Okay.
Getting hot. Oh, she's getting hot.
I am. I'm really hot. It's really boiling.
Don't worry. There's no pressure. All you have to do really is finish these sentences. There's a couple of questions chucked in there as well. Just give a one word answer.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Summer holiday food in one word.
Lower expectations.
I'll give you two. Most underrated family snack.
Muffins.
The one freezer item every family should own.
Peas.
Ooh, I wasn't expecting that one.
I love peas.
If children could eat one thing forever, they should have.
I'm going to say eggs or tofu.
Okay.
Iron. Sorry, nutritionist.
What's one food parents shouldn't feel guilty about?
Pizza. Everyone feels guilty about pizza. It's such a good food.
I was going to say that for picnics as well. Cold pizza.
Yes,
right?
Love that. Yeah. Definitely don't feel guilty about pizza or bread or any food.
One good food habit every family should start tomorrow.
Modeling what to eat. Okay. I think that's the key. Do as I do, not do as I say.
Love that. And then family favorite picnic food, yours. I think I know the answer to this already, but
I've got to go with pesto pasta.
There we go.
Maybe all with some lentils chucked in the top for
balance. Oh, that's a good one.
Love that one.
Oh, you know what? I would love to do more foodie podcasts, JB, because I just really enjoy talking about food.
I know. They make us happy. Not that we're not happy, but we've not stopped smiling, have we?
I think we should do like a little offshoot series just about food.
Yes.
Now, you need to do it like while you're eating food at the same time.
Yeah.
Because then you've got two benefits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte.
You.
That was just so much useful advice in there for families.
Great tips.
Yeah.
And also some good levelers as well, so we don't always feel guilty or feel overwhelmed as well.
Absolutely. Always my aim. Thank you so much. I loved it. I love talking about food, nutrition, weaning. So thank you so much, guys.
All good. Thank you.
Oh, Charlotte, thank you. This has been exactly what parents, including me, need over the summer. Not another list of rules of what to do and what not to do, but practical advice that actually feels achievable. It was super useful. Thank you.
Oh, it really was. And I think that's exactly what it was, Louise. It was practical advice. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is that it wasn't just about sort of healthy eating and, you know, the kids being perfect, but actually modelling what we do and making sure that most of the time what we do is a good example and giving ourselves a bit of grace along the way as well, which I think will definitely make the summer holidays a lot easier. But no, thank you so much, and we'll see everyone next time.
See you next time. Bye.